Good to be with you again, and it's good to be here. Weddings. Yes, I came across a story recently where a mother was with her little daughter, a little girl, and the first time she'd really been to a wedding, and they were attending this wedding, and after a little while, the little girl sort of turned and whispered to her mum, and she said, Mummy, so why is the bride dressed in white? So mother tried to keep things simple for her young daughter, basically said, well, white is the colour of happiness, and this is the happiest day of her life. Daughter nodded and sat and watched everything for a while. And then she turned to her mother and said, Mummy, why is the groom dressed in black? Weddings are full of signs, aren't they? Not least that maybe the exchange of rings and so on and so forth. And when we come to John's Gospel, I'm sure many of you know, is often referred to as the Gospel of Signs. And Jesus performing miracles and so on are regarded as signs as to who he is. And at the end of the passage we're going to look at this morning, that the wedding at Cana, you probably noticed that John in his gospel in verse 11 in the reading, he says, he refers to this as the first of the signs through which he revealed his glory. So we have a sign, and so I'm going to suggest that we go looking for some signs this morning. So first of all, I've put it in the title, let's think a little bit about the wow factor. I'm sure you know the story well. It's well known, and you know what happened. Jesus, his disciples are there, his mother Mary is there, and there is this wedding taking place. And Jewish weddings, I'm sure some of you are aware, Jewish weddings are very, very lavish affairs. I mean, they go on for days sometimes. And there's, quite a large number of people, not just families, all sorts of people there. And the days of celebration can go on and so on and so on and so on. And so there's a little bit of a panic because the wine's run out. And so you know the story, you know it well, we've had it read again. The wine's run out. Mary, his mother, turns to Jesus and says, they don't have any more wine. They don't have any more wine. And so you know how the story goes. Basically, there are some big stone jars there. How much does each one hold? 20 to 30 gallons. Okay, old-fashioned money, gallons, I know, but 20 to 30 gallons. How many jars? Six. So how many gallons do they hold overall? A minimum of 120 gallons, possibly as much as 180 gallons turned into wine.
Wow.
Wow. I'd call that the wow factor. Okay. And it's not just, this is not your cheap stuff. This is not your bargain basement from the supermarket. It's described as fine wine. Near up to 180 gallons. Goodness me. It's the wow factor. And for me, that is a sign. And that points to the fact that with Jesus, when you have Jesus, you don't just get blessed. You get far and away more than you can even begin to imagine. Now, that doesn't mean that being a Christian follower of Jesus is always easy. Of course it's not. We're called to carry a cross. But in the end, overall, what we get from Jesus is far and away more than we can even begin to imagine. I'm always reminded of that verse at the end of Ephesians chapter 3. Now to him who is able to do a bit more than you imagine? No. Now to him who is able to do more than you can imagine? No, Paul didn't say that. He says, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than you can imagine. You got that? Not just more, but more than you can possibly imagine. Beyond that. Which is why I call it the wow factor. Yeah? Being a follower of Jesus, trusting in Jesus, don't make Jesus too small. Don't make Jesus too small. I remember, oh, it just come to me, when I was exploring the faith and I was on the verge of sort of coming to faith, I remember reading a book now. It's just come to me. I can't remember who the author was. It's called Your God is Too Small. Does anyone remember that one? Oh, we're years ago now. But anyway, that made a huge impression on me. Your God is too small. Don't make Jesus too small. Lesson number one. Okay? Secondly, I noticed something else. Who were the first witnesses to this miracle? So who have you got there at the wedding? Well, obviously you've got the bride and the groom. You've got the two families. You've got the close relatives. You've got the master of the banquet is mentioned. There's some very important people here, important people in a wedding. Who are the people who saw the miracle, who seen what had happened? Who knew where it came from? The servants. The ignored people, if you like. The lowest people there, serving everybody. They're the ones who saw what had happened. As far as everyone else can say, oh gosh, you've saved some fine wine till later, till last, wonderful. No, the servants knew. The servants were the first witnesses to this miracle. Of course Jesus came for the whole world. But who did he spend a lot of his time with? Social outcasts, the ignored people, the rejects, lepers, people that other people look down on. And that tells me something about discipleship, about what it means to follow Jesus. I thought of two people when I was preparing this, two people I'd known. One of them I last saw was a fellow tutor at Spurgeon's College, but when he was in ministry, he used to do regular visits. You know this camp that used to be outside Calais? I'm not sure it's there anymore. I used to call it the jungle. Mm-hmm. It's where asylum seekers and so on were just housed off and whatever. He used to do ministry trips there with a group from his church and other churches. Fairly regularly, once a month or so, he'd go there and just mix among the people. And then another person I remember who was a member for a while at Albany Road when I was pastor there. And a lady called Sophie. She got around everywhere. Some of you might even have come across her. But basically, do you know what? She used to be in the Salvation Army. And for various reasons, she left. She became a member in Albany Road. And do you know where she spent her time working during the week? She went into Cardiff Prison. She worked among the prisoners, shared her faith, listened to their stories. And the other place she went to was the streets of Cardiff at night, because she knew where the so-called ladies of the night hung out. And she would draw alongside them, listen to them, talk to them, and share Jesus with them. And to be honest, when she used to tell me that, I used to go, really? Really? Jesus came for everybody, but he spent a lot of his time among the weak, the lowly, and from his birth until his death, he was the suffering servant who gave his life for us all. So that's another lesson I get. You know, it's the servants, that's the lowest of the low. They're the ones that witness this miracle. Thirdly, there's something else I notice. In fact, this is such a well-known story, and yet the more I've read it, I think, of course, there's so much in this. This is incredible. There are signs here, more signs, that clearly point to what Jesus will do in his ministry and through his death on the cross. Stone jars, what were they used for? John tells us, filled with water, and the water was used for ritual purification in the Jewish system. They're used as a sign that people were being purified before God. What will Jesus do on the cross? Purify us from our sin. The fact that the water is turned into wine, well, I'm sure that John's first readers wouldn't have missed the connection there. We haven't got communion today, but there's the link. Oh, there's a sign, isn't it? Turning it into wine. And then, this conversation with his mother, I'll come back to this in a minute, with Mary. She says to him, that the wine's all gone. It's like she's expecting him to do something. You notice his reply, Jesus' reply. Woman, a bit harsh. Woman, why do you involve me? My hour has not yet come. And in John's gospel, whenever Jesus says, my hour, he is explicitly referring to the cross. My time. Why are you involved me? Because my time hasn't come. Here, so here are the signs all over the place. Stone jars, water, ritual purification, wine, my hour. All of these are signs that point to what Jesus will do. And is that right? Have we got that right? Verse 11 in our reading. What Jesus did here in Cana of Galilee was the first of the signs through which he reveals his glory. And in John's gospel, whenever he uses the word glory, it's a clear reference to the cross. It's not a reference to the resurrection. John constantly refers to the cross as the glory of Jesus. Three signs. But then I come to one other lesson, which I think is really quite extraordinary. You know, this refers to Mary. I want to focus on Mary for a minute. I think sometimes, as good Protestants, we don't want to be terribly Catholic, so we tend to underplay Mary a little bit. And I think we shouldn't do that, because there's a wonderful, wonderful example of Mary here. Let me read again from verse 4. You've heard this before. Woman, why do you involve me? Jesus replied. My hour's not yet come. That sounds to me a little bit harsh, doesn't it? So this is his mother, a woman. You notice what she does? She just turns to his to the servants and says, do whatever he tells you. I love it. Absolutely love it. She has complete faith. Jesus is going to do something. So she says, do whatever he tells you. And you know, the more I've read this, the more I've thought about this, I think this is probably one of the greatest definitions of discipleship in the New Testament. What does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? Do whatever he tells you. And you know, sometimes that's really challenging. I can't tell you the number of times I've actually sat there and thought, really? Really? Surely not. Do whatever he tells you. And you may well discover that he's been there before you. He's already paved the way. The door has been half left open for you. Faith means learning obedience. Jesus had to learn what it was to obey. And Hebrews 5:8 says, Jesus learned obedience through his suffering. He learned obedience in Gethsemane. Not my will, but your will be done. Paul says in Philippians 2, Jesus became obedient even to death on a cross. Jesus learned what it was to obey. God incarnate, God with us, and yet this man of Nazareth had to learn the path of obedience. And here, Mary has learned Jesus is worth trusting. Jesus is worth trusting. Do whatever he tells you. Obey him. Do whatever he tells you. And there's a sense in which, of course, Mary brackets the life of Jesus overall, doesn't she? Obviously at his birth. And there she is again at the cross. Mary has a remarkable role in the life of Jesus. So there we are. It's the wow factor. But here's the challenge, to do whatever he tells you. What does that mean then for us today? So in other words, what do you do when the wine runs out? I don't mean go down the shop. What do you do in life when the wine seems to run out? You know, we're human. We all go through it. You know, there are times when you sort of... life just is tough sometimes. It's hard going. You're following Jesus, but there are some tough times and journeys there to be had. So what happens? I think we need to learn these lessons. It's only with Jesus that somewhere along the line you get the wow factor back. Ultimately, in glory. Beyond which we cannot begin to imagine. With Jesus, you get the wow factor. He gives you life, life in all its fullness, and there is always more with Jesus. There's always more. Secondly, never think you're too lowly or that no one cares, that God couldn't possibly care about you. Remember who it was who witnessed the miracle? The servants. Remember that Jesus died for you and for me, and in him you have been set free, purified, made whole. And then finally, this lesson of discipleship. Trust him. Trust him. Just trust him. And that means doing whatever he tells you. Remember the words of Mary. Do whatever he tells you. And don't be surprised that when you do that, God shows up and the most extraordinary things happen that you could never begin to imagine. Because he's in the business of turning water into wine. Amen.